Blank-eyed heroes sat at their meeting room table, surrounding the standing chairperson of the proceedings. As their judge thumped a gavel, his decree was made. Members of the Justice League of America, you're gathered here to deal with the menace of Despero. But I, Despero himself, am taking over. Since I've defeated you all, I now declare this meeting adjourned. Forever.
A podcast for Jean Jones, the Manhunter from Mars, his world, and the vile menagerie of villains he must confront.
The Brave and the Bold number 28 was released on December 29th, 1959, marking 2014 as the 55th anniversary of the dawn of the Justice League of America, which was essentially the starting point of the modern DC Comics universe. Much like Fantastic Four number 1, it's not that there weren't DC properties in existence before that point, but in terms of there actually being a universe of these properties interrelated to one another, that's where that began. For years, you had the World's Finest comics, where Superman, Batman, and Robin hung out together. Most of the other DC heroes were segregated from one another. Wonder Woman had been a participant in the Justice Society of America back during World War II, but their title had ended in the late 40s, early 50s. Wonder Woman had basically been on her own from that point onward. To give you an idea of how fresh the concept of the Justice League of America was, The Flash, who'd been introduced in 1956, had only appeared in 11 comics up to that point. Green Lantern and Hal Jordan, only 3, and neither of those two had met one another prior to Justice League of America's formation. Aquaman, of course, had been beaten around since the Golden Age, and he had related to Superman, at least. He'd guest starred in Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane, but I'm not sure if he'd ever met Batman. Compared to a lot of these newbies, Martian Manhunter was actually something of a veteran. In his 4 years prior to joining the Justice League, he'd appeared in over 50 comic books. John Jones definitely hadn't met the Batman, despite having made every single one of his appearances up to that date in a Batman comic. Now, that first Brave and the Bold story not only introduced the Justice League, but also their first villain, Starro the Conqueror. But Starro was more of a concept than a character. It was a giant space starfish that was taking over people's minds with smaller versions of itself. In the following issue, the JLA fought Zotar, who was a weapons master from the future. And I think that was a pretty solid concept for a villain, but for some reason it just didn't catch on. Nobody ever did anything with the Zotar character after that point. And then in the third tryout story for the Justice League in Brave and the Bold, they faced off Amazo. Both the first Starro and Amazo covers have been homaged. They're very influential, very iconic. For some reason, again, Zotar didn't really do anything. Now, the JLA was such an immediate runaway hit that they launched in their own title within the same calendar year as the end of their tryout season. Justice League of America number 1 was released on August 25th, 1960. Again, very iconic cover, much copied, and the debut of a fairly important villain to the DC universe, Despero. As we go into 2015 and celebrating the 60th anniversary of the Martian Manhunter, one of his major foes came out roughly 5 years later, so we also get to celebrate the 55th anniversary of the creation of Despero, which is credited to writer Gardner F. Fox and artist Mike Sikowski. However, Murphy Anderson drew that first cover, and oftentimes the editor Julie Schwartz would have a cover commissioned and then create the story behind that cover. So I'm not sure what kind of chicken and egg situation we have here, whether or not Murphy Anderson deserves any credit for the creation of Despero. And nobody was ever going to bother to ask who created who in the case of villain, typically. I mean, we don't even know for sure who came up with the Martian Manhunter. Despero has a rather unique design. His skin color is fuchsia, that pink-purple tone, and he has a head like a lizard's frill, this webbed fin. You can imagine the dinosaur that killed Wayne Knight in Jurassic Park, if that helps. And then he runs around in an orangey-tan outfit with a tunic and gloves. He's definitely distinctive. The story of The World of No Return begins when Barry Allen's car loses all power while traveling a lonely country road. The Flash then made his way to a farmhouse where he was surprised to spy a green-haired alien girl and her elderly father. She feared he was one of Despero's hunters, but father explained, "No, Serana, he's an Earth being. I can read his thoughts." Serana enlisted Flash's assistance by describing the circumstances of their presence on his planet. "We come from a dimensional world called Kalanor. There, a three-eyed tyrant called Despero has seized control and made slaves of our people. Some days ago, my father, Jasonar, and I fled from Kalanor in a dimensional traveler, hoping to find asylum on Earth where we could perfect an anti-weapon. Then Despero's super energy weapons would be useless, as was your four-wheeled vehicle, and our people will be able to overthrow the tyrant." Jasonar continued, "Even now, he's searching for us. If he finds us, he'll drag us back to Kalanor, and our people will never be free." The Flash sent a call out to the Justice League, but upon arriving was faced with the grim scene described at the beginning of the show. "Come in, Flash. I, Despero of Kalanor, have been expecting you. Don't bother to look to your friends for help or information, Flash. Only I can release them from this trance, which is why you won't dare attack me.
Despero kidnapped Serana and then launched his surprise attack via teleport beam.
My mystic mental powers overwhelmed all the members but you, Flash. You are still protected by that blue glow you absorbed.
Radiation from Jason R's lab.
Being a sportsman, I have decided to play a simple game with you. Win, and I will release your fellow JLA members and go back to Kalanor, freeing Serana and giving up my pursuit of her father and his anti-weapon device.
Despero then described a game that bore a passing resemblance to a cross between poker and chess, with each leaguer represented by a game piece. As explained, the odds were overwhelmingly in Flash's favor.
If you place your piece on a single disaster square, your fellow member will be teleported instantly into a dimensional world from which I'll make sure he can never return.
Flash agreed to play, only to lose piece after piece to his shock and horror. With his entire team wiped out, Flash was led to a rocket ship to be sent off-world, as the rads that protected him from Despero's mind control also prevented him from being teleported. One thing they didn't guard against was sensory manipulation.
Flash didn't realize my third eye was causing a change in the number of every card he chose, blanking out the right number and causing the disaster square number to appear.
Despero continued his pursuit of Jason R, but was distracted by Snapper Carr.
You're a real bad dad, Despero. I'm going to queer your game.
Rash youth, do you think you can match mental powers with Despero?
The League mascot pretended to be affected by Despero's telepathy, though actually protected through exposure to Jason R's equipment.
Now to punish you for defying me, Jason R.
With his back turned, Despero didn't catch Snapper reaching for Jason R's energy-absorbing machine, which was turned against his very person.
I saw how you worked this gizmo before. I'll leave Despero just enough energy, like, to barely stay alive.
Moments after the League's return to Earth, Jason R departed for Kalanor to reunite with his daughter, the helpless Despero and his anti-energy weapon in tow. I was a Marvel zombie as a kid, so I only ever bought one issue of Who's Who off the stands new, and it just so happened to be the D volume, so that was my first exposure to Despero. And Despero was one of the types of characters I could point to and go, how lame, how dorky the DC characters were versus the Marvel characters. I appreciate Despero's unique appearance. I like how he looks in these stories. I think that it's hard not to see that dorkiness as an essential ingredient of the character in his original incarnation. And honestly, I think that carries through even to the more savage, hulking version that came up in the late 80s and early 90s. I think Despero is, to an extent, an embodiment of nerd rage, because one of the things that's most particular about the character and something that helped to inspire other supervillains that followed him was this predilection towards gameplay. He doesn't just want to defeat the heroes, which he had done handily on the splash page of the first issue of Justice League of America. It's important for him to humiliate the heroes through losing these games of chance, but the fact is they're not games of chance. He's rigged them. So he's not actually outsmarting or beating these guys. He's just making them look and feel bad, giving them that little extra turn of the knife, but he's totally cheating. So he's not proving his superiority. He's just getting off on that degradation of his foes. Both Jason R and Serana, while somewhat impish and green-haired or otherwise Caucasian humans, where Despero clearly is not. A point is made that this guy is a mutant, and he's a goofy-looking mutant as well. So I think that there was some definite anger ingrained in that character, some alienation, and he plays that out not only through conquering his world, but also through the joy he takes in dragging the Justice League through the mud. It's not enough for him to just capture them and exploit them. He wants to send them off these dimensional worlds, these death traps. There's already an inherent sadism in that character, but he goes about it in such a geeky way that it's hard not to see him as being a big old pink nerd. I've always taken Despero's name to be a abbreviated variation on either Despot or Desperado, and that's one of the reasons why I just call him Despero. Plus, it just sounds like an American thing to do. But the word actually exists. It's a Latin word, and it's used in Spanish, Italian, and French, meaning despair, to have no hope, to give up. Repeating villains in the Justice League of America were somewhat uncommon, but there were a handful that appeared rather often. Kanjar Rowe turned up a lot in early stories. The book seemed to really like Dr. Destiny, even though that character wasn't much to speak of when he first appeared. Felix Faust and the Demons 3 turned up a lot, and then to a lesser extent you saw Brainstorm, the Royal Flush Gang, Queen Bee, Dr. Light, the Key, Tio Moro. Despero, even though he, I think, is much better designed and more interesting than a lot of those characters, he only ever appeared one other time in the Silver Age of comics. That would be Justice League of America number 26, cover dated March 1964. In the story Four Worlds to Conquer, Despero would attempt his revenge.
The last time that you saw me, Snapper, I was the defeated one, being taken by Jason R back to my dimensional world for punishment. That punishment took the form of a rehabilitation program during which my third eye, the hypnotic one that gave me all my powers, was surgically
removed. I was a model citizen for a while, but what Jason R. and no one else knew was that my body possessed regenerative powers. Because of my high mental rating, I was assigned to a scientific research laboratory where I honestly did a good day's work while my third eye kept developing. Despero had camouflaged his third eye to escape detection during this time. It was simple to fake an explosion, after which the only trace of me ever found was my belt. Despero then secretly made his way to Earth, where he caused several Justice Leaguers to age rapidly through radiation, while the rest he trapped in individual hourglasses. I could never have captured any of you superheroes without the use of the unusual energies you all possess. Though he had chronal energy enough to set the dominoes falling with Snapper Carr, the energy he stole from the various heroes using their powers in turn provided the fuel for his traps. The Leaguers confined under glass were further traumatized by having their bodies convert to sand. Even now, I have created three alternate Earths, of which reptilian life, insect life, marine life have evolved into the dominant life forms. Though my Kalanor nature will not permit me to slay you, I've arranged for you to travel to these chrono worlds, but on these worlds, you will be even more helpless than you are on your own world, for you shall no longer have your superpowers. Though you have changed to chrono sand, you still possess enough life force to understand the completeness of my victory. Your failure will be as bitter ashes in your mouth for the rest of your futile lives. There should be some doubt about Despero's creation of these worlds, not only because he lacked the power, but because three parallel Desperos sought to conquer these planets. One was defeated by Flash, another by Green Lantern, and a third by the team of Aquaman and Martian Manhunter. On each Earth, Despero had failed to reckon with the inhabitants' ability to replicate the hero's former powers when in physical contact with them. In a bid to salvage his scheme, Despero cast the illusion of himself as a withered Superman to imprison the Leaguers at the Sanctuary. Wonder Woman was convinced, though, knowing Superman could only be affected by magic or kryptonite, not chronal energy. She bound him in her lasso, forcing the restoration of the League. Flash questioned, "Now the problem is, what do we do with Despero?" I like the aspect of Despero being unwilling to outright kill the Justice League, but putting him in the situations where they either would be likely to die or would be tormented by their inability to die. I think it shows the impact that his environment had on Despero, that whether, regardless of him being a mutant tyrant, he's still a Kalanorian, he was still brought up with certain mores, and it shows the character's deterioration, his backslide into a more bestial mentality as he becomes much more willing to inflict lethal damage to his foes directly without any compunctions. The reason I like Despero is much the same reason why I like John Jones. He has a wealth of continuity and story material that's never been properly unpacked by anyone. Most people don't ever seem to even try to excavate that material. For instance, if Kalanor is such a swell planet, they surgically removed his eye. They were willing to mutilate him and rob him of his abilities so that he can better conform to their society. I'd like to find out a little bit more about this world. Jason R., this grinning, pixie-looking dude, he's a little bit creepy at the same time. And again, this is a guy who would have been involved with this forced amputation of Despero. So maybe not as good of a guy as we would think. Jason R. and Serana, they both appeared very briefly, if I recall correctly, in Despero's second appearance in 1964 and then never again. And you'd think that these would be key characters in his story. But instead what happens is writers come in and they just keep adding to the Despero story. Nobody ever goes back and revisits the material of the old creators. So the character just keeps building and building mythos that isn't explored. It makes him fascinating to me, and at the same time, it's distressing that the character could be so much more than they've been allowed to be because nobody wants to take the time to work with the material that's already present. It kills me because there are characters like Superman that people keep going back to the same stuff over and over again, the same themes, the same characters, the same devices. There should be more to Superman. People should be willing to create new things for a character like that. It's one of the greatest characters in pop culture, and somebody's just got to do another prankster story instead of creating something original. Conversely, a character like Despero can't progress if all he does is turn up every year or so to thrash the Justice League mercilessly and then get defeated without anything ever being built upon the foundations that were laid down here and in other stories. That's how you progress from a Despero to a Lex Luthor. The most recent scuttlebutt on the upcoming Justice League Part 1 and 2 movies is that Brainiac would be the villain in the first movie and Darkseid the villain in the second movie. And I think that that would be a real shame because neither one of those characters are true Justice League villains. Superman doesn't have a great rogues gallery, and taking Brainiac away from him from one of his own solo movies seems like a bad call all to me. He needs everyone that he can hold on to. And I don't see the Brainiac being a character that can threaten the entire Justice League. It's not what he was built for. In the case of Darkseid, this is a character who's created to be part of the Fourth World Saga. He's a new god. That's where all of his original stories come from. And his association with the Justice League didn't begin until over 10 years after he was created. Also, to some degree, Darkseid is the ultimate DC villain. That's the guy who inspired the creation of Darth Vader. So when you try to come out with Darkseid right out of the gate in one of your first movies, you're failing. Where do you go from there? Who's your next choice? Anti-Monitor? That's the sound of a wooden barrel being scraped. If you're going to do a Justice League movie, it seems to me like you ought to use Justice League villains. And much in the same way that the first Avengers movie used the Chitauri as generic cannon fodder that would be powerful enough to give the Avengers pause, but not so much that you would have to have one Avenger dealing with one individual Chitauri in the way that a Thor would have to deal with the Loki. Having a first Justice League movie involves Starro, some variation on the Star Conqueror, potentially setting up hero versus hero fights that make more sense than the typical Marvel Rose. That's the way that I would go personally, because it would allow the Justice League to have more of its own identity rather than seeming like a Johnny come lately to the Avengers, who of course the Justice League inspired in the actual comic books. And then for me, at some point, you would get Despero into those movies as well, preferably in the first or second one, potentially in this incarnation or perhaps in his more evolved form. I recognize that his games playing, particularly the chess aspect, has already been swiped by the bouts between Xavier and Magneto in the X-Men movies, but there are other ways to convey that. And again, that's something that hasn't been seen in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Having a more intellectual villain and playing a longer game where perhaps you have one version of Despero at the beginning of these movies and then another version by the end, giving that character an opportunity to evolve on screen, I think that could be compelling. And especially, regardless what whichever version of Despero you would use in a film, he's not going to look like anybody else that anybody's seen, whether that Finn's going into Mohawk form or into the webbed flap that he had at the beginning. He's very distinctive. And of course, his personality is somewhat unique as well. So personally, I think that'd be nice to see. But then again, I'm obviously a fan of Despero. I just made a podcast about him. And this won't be the last podcast I do about Despero either. He's going to be sharing an anniversary with the Martian Manhunter. He's one of the Manhunter's most popular and capable foes. So we will be discussing him again in 2015. Mind Bullets! Let me just say, I'm not married to the name Mind Bullets. I just wasn't willing to commit the thought they would be required to come up with a better name for our mail section. Your suggestions are very much welcome. Retweets that are helping to promote the Idlehead of Diabolu podcast came from Between the Pages, Count Druncula, Eternal Rage, and Longbox Graveyard, while favorites came from Ange, Count Druncula, and Eternal Rage. Count Druncula wrote, "Woo!" Ange wrote, "Hurrah, we'll listen soon. Glad you're back here in some form," referring to the late lamented blog version of The Idlehead of Diabolu, which I'm still putting up stuff every now and again on. Ange continued, "I learn a lot from this site, so we'll listen intently." Will in Chicago said, "Frank, it is good to see you back. I hope that all is well. You may want to check out Aquaman number 36, which features a guest appearance by John Jones. Maybe this is a sign that John will be making a few more guest appearances." As a matter of fact, I bought that issue of Aquaman. I had it on pre-order, and I'm looking forward to covering it in January. Mathematics Score wrote, "Great stuff, Frank. Looking forward to future episodes." And somebody entirely new to me, Matt Whitmore, noted, "I've been reading comics with the Martian Manhunter for nearly 50 years, but before this episode, I never noticed that his costume is based on John Carter of Mars. Duh. Great first episode." Thanks, fellas.